Blog Talk Radio.
Americans, I want to talk to you plainly tonight about what we're doing in Korea and about our policy in the Far East. In the simplest terms, what we're doing in Korea is this: we're trying to prevent a third world war. The communists in the Kremlin are engaged in a monstrous conspiracy to stamp out freedom all over the world. If they were to succeed, the United States would be numbered among their principal victims. It must be clear to everyone that the United States cannot and will not sit idly by and await foreign conquest. The only question is, when is the best time to meet the threat and how is the best time to meet it? The best time to meet the threat is in the beginning. It is easier to put out a fire in the beginning when it is small than after it has become a roaring blaze. And the best way to meet the threat of aggression is for the peace-loving nations to act together. If they don't act together, they are likely to be picked off one by one. Their aggression against Korea is the boldest and most dangerous move the communists have yet made. The attack on Korea was a part of a greater plan for conquering all Asia. I would like to read to you from a secret intelligence report which came to us after the attack. The report tells what a communist officer in the Far East told his men several months before the invasion of Korea. Here's what he said. In order to successfully undertake the long-awaited world revolution, we must first unify Asia, Java, Indochina, Malaya, India, Tibet, Thailand, Philippines, and Japan are our ultimate targets.
Well, that was President Harry Truman. Now, MacArthur came back through San Francisco. He had a ticker tape parade, and everybody was upset with Truman. And MacArthur was invited to address the U.S. Congress. And this is what he said in his farewell to the nation.
Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, and distinguished members of the Congress, I stand on this rostrum with a sense of deep humility and great pride. Humility in the wake of those great American architects of our history who have stood here before me. Pride in the reflection that this forum of legislative debate represents human liberty in the purest form yet devised. Here are centered the hopes and aspirations and faith of the entire human race. I do not stand here as advocate for any partisan cause, for the issues are fundamental and reach quite beyond the realm of partisan consideration. They must be resolved on the highest plane of national interest if our course is to prove sound and our future protected. I trust, therefore, that you will do me the justice of receiving that which I have to say as solely expressing the considered viewpoint of a fellow American. I address you with neither rancor nor bitterness. In the fading twilight of life, with but one purpose in mind, to serve my country. The issues are global and so interlocked that to consider the problems of one sector oblivious to those of another is but to court disaster for the whole. While Asia is commonly referred to as the gateway to Europe, it is no less true that Europe is the gateway to Asia. And the broad influence of the one cannot fail to have its impact upon the other. There are those who claim our strength is inadequate to protect on both fronts, that we cannot divide our effort. I can think of no greater expression of defeatism. If a potential enemy can divide his strength on two fronts, it is for us to counter his effort. The communist threat is a global one. Its successful advance in one sector threatens the destruction of every other sector. You cannot appease or otherwise surrender to communism in Asia without simultaneously undermining our efforts to halt its advance in Europe. Beyond pointing out these general truisms, I shall confine my discussion to the general areas of Asia. Before one may objectively assess the situation now existing there, he must comprehend something of Asia's past and the revolutionary changes which have marked her course up to the present. Long exploited by the so-called colonial powers, with little opportunity to achieve any degree of social justice, individual dignity, or a higher standard of life, such as guided our own noble administration of the Philippines, the peoples of Asia found their opportunity in the war just passed to throw off the shackles of colonialism and now see the dawn of new opportunity, a heretofore unfelt dignity, and the self-respect of political freedom. Mustering half of the Earth's population and 60% of its natural resources, these peoples are rapidly consolidating a new force, both moral and material, with which to raise the living standard and erect adaptations of the design of modern progress to their own distinct cultural environments. Whether one adheres to the concept of colonization or not, this is the direction of Asian progress, and it may not be stopped.
That was General MacArthur's farewell address. Now, this is also the week where Jefferson started poverty, the civil rights legislation, and I think it's appropriate to say this.
All Americans must have the privileges of citizenship, regardless of race. And they are going to have those privileges of citizenship, regardless of race. But I would like to caution you and remind you that to exercise these privileges takes much more than just legal right. It requires a trained mind and a healthy body. It requires a decent home and the chance to find a job and the opportunity to escape from the clutches of poverty. Of course, people cannot contribute to the nation if they are never taught to read or write, if their bodies are stunted from hunger, if their sickness goes untended, if their life is spent in hopeless poverty, just drawing a welfare check. So we want to open the gates to opportunity. But we're also going to give all our people, black and white, the help that they need to walk through those gates. My first job after college was as a teacher in Cotulla, Texas, in a small Mexican-American school. Few of them could speak English, and I couldn't speak much Spanish. My students were poor, and they often came to class without breakfast, hungry. And they knew, even in their youth, the pain of prejudice. They never seemed to know why people disliked them. But they knew it was so, because I saw it in their eyes. I often walked home late in the afternoon after the classes were finished, wishing there was more that I could do. But all I knew was to teach them the little that I knew, hoping that it might help them against the hardships that lay ahead. And somehow you never forget what poverty and hatred can do when you see its scars on the hopeful face of a young child. I never thought then, in 1928, that I would be standing here in 1965. It never even occurred to me in my fondest dreams that I might have the chance to help the sons and daughters of those students and to help people like them all over this country. But now I do have that chance. And I'll let you in on a secret. I mean to use it. hope that you will use it with me. But I came down here to ask you to share this task with me and to share it with the people that we both work for. I want this to be the Congress, Republicans and Democrats alike, which did all these things for all these people. Beyond this great chamber, out yonder in 50 states are the people that we serve. Who can tell what deep and unspoken hopes are in their hearts tonight as they sit there and listen? We all can guess from our own lives how difficult they often find their own pursuit of happiness. How many problems each little family has. They look most of all to themselves for their future. But I think that they also look to each of us. Above the pyramid on the Great Seal of the United States, it says in Latin, God has favored our undertaking. God will not favor everything that we do. It is rather our duty to divine His will. But I cannot help believing that He truly understands and that He really favors the undertaking that we begin here tonight.
Public office is public service. It's not an opportunity to enrich yourself, friends, your family. But that's what's happened. And we need to get back to realizing that public service is an honorable service. And you're thinking of not only this generation, but the next generation. So we will be bringing, we've had some problems this week, and more things that are relevant. We're going to end early tonight with our usual opening. And next week we'll have other things bringing up that are relevant to what's going on today. Excuse me. And hopefully that we will have some things done and make people think instead of just reacting. So as our usual, I'll take and go to our major YouTube site. Oh, excuse me. We will and we'll probably do an early show Sunday instead of Monday. Procedures that I have to take care of, and it's going to tie up most of the day, so we'll probably be back Monday, and we'll play our needle pop poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Hit me with a
kick. Ready? Gentlemen.
gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace Betts.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one, I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bat out.
Politics and poker, politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. He's a game for children, he's a game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
when to call the bluff.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paraphrase.
Bet 'em.
Little trays, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your five.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fanyashinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot!
Politics and poker, politics and poker, play for a pot that's mediocre. Politics and poker, rubbing neck and neck. If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the deck. Politics and poker, politics and poker, makes the average guy.
We've seen the reversal of racial relationships in South Africa. 1948, the nationalist right-wing party came to power, and they saw blacks and coloreds. It was a mix of white, Indian, and black. And that population of South Africa as a threat to the whites and the Afrikaners were descendants from Holland, France, and England. And they, of course, the Dutch Reformed Church, you can call it that. What happened was there was apartheid and was very, a lot of bloodshed utilized. They filed, it was a white judge, black defendant, maybe a black lawyer. In his case, treason, but he beat him up to Robin Mellon. Completely reversed, and the most prominent aspect of this reversal is this white South African tourist who had this tragedy at his birth. He lost his lower legs, didn't have them, and he is accused of murdering his living girlfriend. But it's a black judge with a white defendant and a white prosecutor. I'm finding this very interesting. Also, the South African Nazis had been brought to trial, and they've been facing a black judge. So it's quite interesting to see where it goes. Sunday show in medical Peter Paul Rizzola, go to our Meekins Fairchild YouTube site. Good night.